Mimi Stillman, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Susan. It's a great pleasure to be back with you at WRTI.
Now, Dolce Suono is 12 years old?
Yes, we just completed our 12th season. It's hard to believe. The time has flown because we've been having a lot of fun.
And it's a great ensemble. And in addition to being known for musical excellence and expanding the repertoire by commissioning new work, you're also known for these thoughtful presentation of music along different themes. Let's talk about the music of the Second Capitol.
Okay, well, music in the Second Capitol, and that kind of maybe gives everyone a moment to think, oh, the Second Capitol of the United States, yes, we're in it, Philadelphia. So we decided to do a chamber music project that looks at the musical tastes of the Founding Fathers and music culture in late colonial and early Republic Philadelphia. We were excited by the historic richness of our own city. So we thought not only are we going to play music that the Founding Fathers loved, both European music and American music by Philadelphia composers who were famous for other things like Benjamin Franklin and Francis Hopkinson, but we're going to do it at historic sites and kind of connect the art with the place, the sense of place here in Philadelphia.
It's not just music that was being written and listened to and performed in this time period. You're actually pinning it to Philadelphia and things that people who were living in Philadelphia listened to. How did you do that research?
Well, one of the most exciting things was delving into Thomas Jefferson's music collection. It's known as the Monticello Music Collection, and the part that we examined is housed at the University of Virginia. This was about 2 years ago in the planning process, and they brought out 10 boxes filled with music, and most of it was 18th and early 19th century music. A lot of it Thomas Jefferson bought on his rather important diplomatic trips to Europe and brought home to Monticello. He was a very serious and accomplished violinist, and he played with a lot of friends at his house when he received guests, and they had, you know, rich musical evenings. So we got to see what he owned and also see some of the manuscripts that were, let's say, written or note taken, music notes taken by members of his family. The women in his family were accomplished musicians as well. So it was interesting to see things in their handwriting as well as things that were printed. And we based a lot of the programming for the project on some of this repertoire that was in Thomas Jefferson's collection.
Wow. What kind of notes existed? What notations as to dynamics and way to play something?
It's fascinating. I think we didn't see a lot of handwritten notes on the printed music, but looking at some of the things that were by hand, and sometimes there was a notation by a later scholar which member of the Jefferson family probably wrote it down, I kind of connected to perhaps the commonplace book tradition before everyone just could print out things off the internet. You know, they really had to take notes. So there were some folk tunes that people had written down, or little sketches or fragments of music that were actually handwritten, but the majority was printed music.
Wow. So is most of this from the Jefferson collection?
A lot of it is, or composers from it. So there was a lot of Corelli. I mentioned Pleyel, Mozart, Haydn. What's interesting also is that at a time before recorded music, people might go to the opera or go to a concert and then not be able to hear that piece of music again unless they bought a sort of chamber version. And so what was interesting is that there were short scores of Haydn symphony movements that were printed after the premieres of the symphonies for full orchestra that people could then take home and play. So this whole tradition of, let's say, amateur music making or home music making, which is really popular, especially in England in the 18th century and also in America. And so that's what some of we're doing. We're going to do in our October 15th concert some chamber versions of Haydn symphonies. You don't hear those all the time.
Wow, that's fascinating.
It's a lot of fun, yeah. And I think one of the interesting points also is a transatlantic idea. Like a lot of the famous Baroque and classical music that we play, of course, was written in Europe, and that's well represented in the United States. And loved getting to see a little bit about what was being written and also published in Philadelphia. We were right practically on the block where a lot of music was published, the kind of Market Street block between 1st and 2nd Street.
Wow. Now, so was the music that was being written for professionals or written for amateurs or both?
That's a great question because, I mean, we're very interested in not just, you know, what music we receive here in the 21st century in play, but how was it consumed? You know, who was buying it? Who was playing it? Was it being performed? And it seems like there was definitely public concerts happening in Philadelphia, especially as you get into the 19th century. But all along, there was just a lot of this home music making, friends getting together, a little bit what I described at Monticello with Thomas Jefferson, or what we read about went on at Mount Vernon. George Washington loved to dance, and you can see the instruments that were in his house and that were played by people while that went on, and that went on in Philadelphia as well.
When we're looking at history, we have the sense that the atmosphere and the dynamics and the social interaction among people in Philadelphia may have derived from Europe and England, but there perhaps was a different dynamic, more rough and tumble perhaps than in England. Did you get a sense that the music they were listening to reflected their revolutionary spirit?
Actually, yes, to some extent. I mean, we were playing songs composed by Francis Hopkinson that were dedicated to His Excellency, quote, George Washington, Esquire. And we were playing these in Washington Square at our pop-up concerts, just steps away from the George Washington statue and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. So that was really moving. But there was definitely the sense that they were, for amateur, let's say, untrained musicians, to sing, to play. It's often in a very accessible score form, so you can tell by looking at it, it's a melody and a bass line or a simple, let's say, piano part that could also be adapted by a guitarist. Or if you don't have a singer, you can play the melody on the flute or the violin. But we also see a lot of patriotic songs, so lots of different publications, let's say, of Yankee Doodle, something that I had fun playing on my fife as part of this project as well, but kind of military pieces that were then published or things that were used actually by fife and drum corps.
So this is really a fascinating way to look at history, and I always think about this whenever we talk. Yeah. How do you think understanding the music enriches our understanding of that historical time?
I think it's utterly fascinating to try to think about great historical events using all of your senses. So if you read about the Continental Congress and you read, let's say, okay, where did the founding fathers go worship while they were in town? And then you can say, okay, well, many were at Christ Church, where today you can visit George Washington's pew. You can also then delve into it further and say, okay, what was the liturgical music? Well, Francis Hopkinson, who I mentioned is a major figure in our project, he composed a set of psalms and hymns for Christ Church that was published in 1763. And for me as a flutist, I think, okay, so this was happening in Philadelphia. That was the same year that C.P.E. Bach's solo sonata for flute was published in Germany. So that really enriches my sense of the sound world or the mental world, the transatlantic musical culture that was going on. We get to think, okay, what were these people doing for entertainment, or what were the sounds that surrounded them at the time that our nation was being founded?
Sounds like a wonderful project. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.